we step into the account of Jacob in chapter 32 of Genesis, and this is our 46th study in our series of expositions of the book of Genesis. And when we step into chapter 32, Jacob has just left Laban after making a treaty with him and is obeying God's instruction earlier to return to Bethel. This is some 20 plus years after he went north from Beersheba and then to what he named, the place he named Bethel, where God met him in that staircase vision. And then he went on to Haran to get a wife. He comes back with two wives, two maidservants, 11 children, and huge flocks of animals. I've reproduced a map here for you, which shows his journeys northward, starting in Beersheba, all the way to Haran, and then southward, 20 years later, as he returns to Bethel. And the route back carries spiritual information, and I've reproduced in your notes on the last page a full-page blow-up of the, particularly the last part, the beginning of his journey, and then the last part of his journey. And you'll notice that it is quite a distance from Beersheba all the way up to Haran, which is right now really in what is right now far southern Turkey and far northern Syria. But the most important part is his return, as we'll see, on the eastern side of the Jordan, rather than crossing over earlier to get all the way down to Bethel and back to eventually to Beersheba to the south. But we'll comment on that a little bit more. In chapter 31, Laban has pursued Jacob, with Jacob being on the eastern side of the Jordan River. Esau is on the same side, but far to the south, in what is both events. Esau was lived in the south, and the event of Laban catching up with Jacob, both of these occur in what is now Jordan. Esau, again, is on the same side as of the Jordan River where Laban caught up with Jacob. The normal route to Bethel from Haran would have been closer to the coast. In other words, he might have crossed over earlier. But these events, we'll see in a moment, occurred on the eastern side of the river before he crosses over into the land, which was part of the area that God had promised to Abraham and then Isaac and renewed for Jacob. Jacob has intentionally stayed to the east of Jordan, in order to meet with his brother and reconcile with him. So that his path, as shown in the geography here on the maps, carries spiritual information. In considering the need for Jacob to be reconciled with his brother in order to be right with God, commentator Derek Kidner says, geographically, the call to Bethel would take Jacob nowhere near Esau, that is, east of the Jordan. Spiritually, he could reach Bethel no other way, returning to the place that he started from. Actually, he started from Beersheba, but Bethel is the key point. Besides, Kidner says, to meet God, he must first be reconciled with his brother. The sequence of chapters 32 and 33, culminating in chapter 35, verses 1 through 15, Kidner says, and that's where, chapter 35, Jacob cleanses his family of idols, gets rid of the idols, and God, in a fuller statement than he does in this chapter, our chapter for today, In a fuller statement, God changes Jacob's name to Israel. But the sequence of the chapters, Kidner says, acts out powerfully the principles of Matthew 5:23-25a. And I'd like you to turn there to those verses. I have not reproduced them for you. Matthew chapter 5, verse 23. Matthew 5:23. Therefore, if you are offering your gift at the altar, and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First go and be reconciled to your brother, then come and offer your gift. So reconciliation with a brother before worshiping and approaching God. So in a sense, Jacob is taking the initiative to reverse his deceptive sins of previous years. While he fears meeting Esau and makes detailed plans for the encounter, dividing up his entourage into two groups for fear of Esau's slaughter of everyone, he says, I want all my animals and people to be, family to be divided into two groups so that if Esau slaughters one, at least the other group can get away. And so he puts his beloved Rachel at the rear of one of the groups, sending a large number of animals ahead to potentially pacify Esau. But as he does this, he now accompanies his plans with prayer, something very different for Jacob. It's new for him. He has changed. The text of chapter 32, verses 7 through 12, gives us his response to the news that Esau was coming to meet him with 400 men. Verse 7 of chapter 32, in great fear and distress, Jacob divided the people who were with him into two groups, and the flocks and herds and camels as well. He thought, if Esau comes and attacks one group, the group that is left may escape. Now, very unusual, of course, for Jacob. Then Jacob prayed. He said, O God of my father Abraham, God of my father Isaac, Lord, you who said to me, go back to your country and your relatives, and I will make you prosper. I am unworthy of all the kindness and faithfulness you have shown your servant. I had only my staff when I crossed this Jordan, but now I have become two camps. In other words, when he started out, he had nothing. Now look at all that he has. Verse 11 of chapter 32. Save me, I pray, from the hand of my brother Esau, for I am afraid he will come and attack me, and also the mothers with their children. But you have said, I will surely make you prosper and will make your descendants like the sand of the sea, which cannot be counted. This is new for Jacob. In fact, the text as a whole tells us that the sequence was he planned and then he prayed, he planned, he prayed, and he planned some more. Jacob's sanctification has moved along significantly in the right direction. And remember that sanctification is the process that God takes all believers through, Old Testament and New Testament, between the moment of salvation and the time of our going to be with him. And during that period, he changes us to make us more like himself. It's not a sudden event where, as some claim, a person who speaks in tongues, for example, will arrive instantly at spirituality. Sanctification is a stepwise growth process. Because of God's chastening and disciplining work carried out particularly through Laban, a man very much like himself, Jacob has learned to walk in dependence on God. Jacob's growth has taken over 20 years. And by the way, I think of Laban as parallel to the Assyrians and the Babylonians. The northern kingdom under the divided kingdoms had the Assyrians as their tormentor. The southern kingdom in the next century had the Babylonians as their tormentor. The Apostle Paul had what? He had the thorn in the flesh. Now, in the case of Laban and the Babylonians and Assyrians, God removed that major irritant, as it were, with Paul. He left it there. That's his choice, but they were instruments in life that God uses to discipline, chastise, and cause to grow. So, in preparing for the encounter with Esau, Jacob makes very detailed plans, but now prayer and faith underlie what he is doing, even humility. He says, verse 10 of chapter 32, we read, "I'm unworthy of all the kindness and faithfulness you have shown your servant." What a change in this man. As the account of Jacob in Genesis draws to a close, we find that the up and down, as it were, a sine wave of earlier days in his life has become much smoother. In fact, there is nothing more negative, I don't think, said about him in the Genesis text. Jacob has learned what it's like to walk with a sovereign God who wants us to trust him to direct us and provide for us. Now, it's significant that before the potentially disastrous meeting with Esau could take place, he thought it was going to be likely to be disastrous, God reveals himself to Jacob in the first step in a two-part climax to God's dealing with him, as found in the Genesis account. It's a capping off of Jacob's new spiritual maturity. And remember again 1 Corinthians 2:15, where the spiritual person is the one who is mature in the things of God. Jacob has come to this point. The second part, it's a two-part climax. The first part we'll expand on in a moment. The second part comes in chapter 35, where God gives quite a bit of information about the change in Jacob's name to Israel and reiterates the promises given to Abraham and Isaac. But the first part of this two-part climax to Jacob's life, to God's dealing with Jacob, is the amazing account of Jacob's actually wrestling physically with God. Now, here is the account itself, and I've preserved the paragraphing divisions of the NIV because of the information that they carry, the back and forth, the conversation between God and Jacob. And by the way, regarding verse 26, where God says, the man says, "Let me go, for it is daybreak, seems to me to be like Luke chapter 24 and verse 28 on the Emmaus Road, where Jesus continued on as if he were going further. I think it was a testing to see if there was genuine spiritual interest. So here's the text. "That night Jacob got up and took his two wives, his two female servants, and his 11 sons, and crossed the ford of the Jabbok River. After he had sent them across the stream, he sent over all his possessions. So Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him till daybreak." There are a lot of things in this text that we don't have time to go into, but even just the wording, "he was left alone," he's stripped of all his resources, which earlier in the Genesis account was his ability to scheme and make plans and make things happen. Well, now he is left alone. "When the man saw that he could not overpower him, he touched the socket of Jacob's hip, so that his hip was wrenched as he wrestled with the man. Then the man said, 'Let me go, for it is daybreak.'" Again, I think that was, it's the same kind of thing that Jesus said to his disciples on the Emmaus Road, testing them to see how much spiritual interest they had. And Jacob responds the right way. "Jacob replied, 'I will not let you go unless you bless me.' The man asked him, 'What is your name?'" Notice there's no answer to the question or to the request, I will not let you go unless you bless me. The man that's wrestling with him doesn't give him an answer yet. The man asked instead, he says, what is your name? Jacob, he answered. Then the man said, your name will no longer be Jacob, but Israel, because you have struggled with God and with humans and have overcome. Now there's a struggling going on here in the wrestling match, but he has struggled with humans, with Esau, his father, Laban, trying to get ahead, scheming, struggling, wrestling with others figuratively, and he's also struggled with God spiritually. That's the sine wave, the ups and downs in his life. This is telling us, and there are other features in the text that tell us, his real struggle throughout life was with God. Would he put God first? Would he walk in faith with God? But now a physical struggling with God pictures outwardly the spiritual struggles, both with human beings and with God. But your name will no longer be Jacob, but Israel, because you have struggled with God and with humans and have overcome. Excuse me. Jacob said, please tell me your name. How many times has he said this? Right? Twice. He's insistent. But earlier he's insistent and pushy with human beings. Remember with Esau, when Esau comes into from the field and Jacob has the stew that he's made. And Esau says, give me some of that red, red stuff, I'm famished. And Jacob pushes right ahead to grab what he wants. And here he's pushing again. He says, first of all, I will not let you go unless you bless me. He's asking for something from God. Verse 29, again, he's pushy, but in the right way. Now it's in his relationship with God. Please tell me your name. But he replied, why do you ask my name? Then he blessed him there. There's no answer, at least not a direct answer, as to who this wrestler was, the one who's struggled with, that Jacob has struggled with all night. But he replied, why do you ask my name? And then he blessed him. So he gets the blessing instead of the simple answer of the name of the one he was wrestling with. But that tells us something, doesn't it? That Jacob's insistence now to receive things from God as opposed to getting things from Esau and getting things from Laban. Now he's insisting on getting something from God. And instead of telling him his name straight out, God gives him a blessing. Why? The text is telling us in the flow of the text here, it's because of his insistence on deepening his knowledge of God. Verse 30, so Jacob called the place Peniel, saying, it is because I saw God face to face, and yet my life was spared. He has seen the face of God. The text explains it, of course, because Jacob says, it's because I saw God face to face, and yet my life was spared. Now, in that statement about his understanding who was doing the wrestling, he tells us, of course, who the opponent was in the struggling match. And he commemorates the very location by calling it Peniel, the face of God. It's because I saw God face to face, and yet my life was spared. Part of his new humility, I seen God, but God was good to me and didn't take my life. The sun rose above him as he passed Penny Ale, and he was limping because of his hip. Well, just as with Abraham and Isaac on Mount Moriah, where Abraham is about to bring the knife down on his son, but God says, you've done well. In a sense, he says, you've done well. You obeyed me. You do not have to go through with this. In the same way now with Jacob, God is showing his approval of the changes in Jacob's life. Again, as Derek Kidner says, the great encounter with God came when Jacob knew himself to be exposed to a situation wholly beyond him, that is, 400 men coming with Esau. The threat of it had already driven him to prayer, as we saw, and both his renewed desire to be alone and the form that the night struggle took indicate a hunger now for God himself, a hunger awakened by the crisis but not determined by it. In other words, I think Kidner is saying the threat of 400 men with Esau coming toward him did not make it necessary that he pray and humble himself before God and struggle in a final sense with God. But Jacob chose to do it by faith, and that was good. The account then shows that all of Jacob's struggles were ultimately with God himself. Because verse 28 says, you've struggled with God. He's not talking about so much the nighttime wrestling match, but really his whole life. Jacob's struggles were ultimately with God himself, not Esau or even Laban. And all along, God was in control as he is in this struggle in the night. The end result is that God cripples Jacob, introducing a physical injury that would require Jacob to remember his weakness, physical weakness, picturing spiritual weakness. So at the same time, Jacob's bent to struggling has now been shifted to become a successful wrestler to get God's blessing. So struggling in life now, struggling, striving, pushing to get blessing from God. That's the change. Jacob's opponent here must be an appearance in the form of a man of the second person of the Trinity before Bethlehem. And remember that, as your teacher has said a number of times recently, that there was no Jesus before Bethlehem. Jesus started, in a sense, at Bethlehem. Humanity and deity joined together, that's Jesus, started in space and time at Bethlehem. And we remember also John 1:8, no one has seen God at any time, must be a reference to the Father. So we have now, then, here in the wrestling match, an appearance of the second person of the Trinity before Bethlehem. Hosea 12:4 says about Jacob, he struggled with the angel and overcame him. We have here, then, what must be the same as the appearances of the angel of the Lord in the Old Testament. This text does not speak of the angel of the Lord, but Hosea says it was an angel, and I think we're justified in saying, as with so many of the occurrences of the angel of the Lord in the Old Testament, it was an appearance before Bethlehem of the second person of the Trinity. And one of the outcomes, of course, is that Jesus did not wrestle with Jacob. The match lasted through the night until dawn. At the human level, it must have been very intense, of course. But Jacob must have realized along the way that he was involved with a supernatural being. And so the turning point is in verse 26, the second part, where he says, I will not let you go until you bless me. I will not let you go until you bless me. Probably suspecting then that he was dealing with a supernatural being, Jacob asks for his opponent's identity. The names of God in the Bible are significant and help us to relate to God. Jacob is trying to nail down his relationship with this one who both cripples him and then blesses him. But the wrestler first changes Jacob's name from one that means to grab someone's heel to trip someone. He changes it from Jacob to Israel, which speaks of struggling with God. Only after he has changed Jacob's name does he give Jacob enough understanding to realize that he's been wrestling with God himself. So in the sequence of the text, doesn't reveal his name till reveal who he is, where Jacob says, I've been wrestling with God, I've seen the face of God, until he's changed Jacob's name. And so, of course, then Jacob can say that during this night he has seen the face of God. We might wonder why there was no victory for the one who was called the man, must have been the second person of the Trinity. We know that he was more powerful, since only a touch dislocated or twisted Jacob's hip. A wrestler today could dislocate someone, his opponent's hip, if he were strong enough. But it would probably take a little while and some technique to do it here. It was just a touch that the divine wrestler used to dislocate Jacob's hip. Verse 25 must mean that using normal human strength, Jacob was winning or bringing about a draw, so God was holding back. But in the end, then, Jacob was crippled by a supernatural blow. And so the one who struggled with others struggled here and did well, but was overcome by God. There's no indication that his wrestling with God was a bad thing, and every indication that it was good and was a physical picture of a spiritual history for Jacob. Jacob learned something about God, that he could not defeat him. Couldn't defeat him physically, and that pictures the same thing in the spiritual realm. Jacob's own strength thus proved worthless. It failed him, but led to a new walk of faith. Jacob always came out on top in his scheming, his struggling with others. Until the end with Laban, where he comes up short and he runs away with his family, and text says he did the wrong thing there. His plans didn't work there. Jacob's own strength in the wrestling match proved worthless as they were starting to in life. His own strength failed him, but led to a new walk of faith. And this was a watershed in Jacob's life, and then we could say it's the climax of his life of struggling, where his struggling with people comes to be ultimately seen as a struggling with God and a coming to a draw, but a blessed draw, that is. Why did this wrestling match take place? Well, the purpose of the wrestling was to signal the change of Jacob into Israel. Jacob met God at the entrance back into the land. Geography is important. The place of blessing for the patriarchs was where? In the land. Abraham, don't go to Egypt, stay in the land. The land is a place of blessing. Not that God couldn't bless someone somewhere else, but the land was the key. So as Jacob is about to cross from the eastern side of the Jordan to the western side into the land, here is the change in his name from the one who trips people to the one who struggled with God and has, in a sense, won. All of Jacob's life to this point was a preparation for this. He couldn't enter the land without a change from self-will to seeking God's blessing. God would not allow Jacob to enter the land as the deceiver. And although he could enter as a struggler, he would now enter as one who struggled to get blessing from God. He'd enter the land as one who'd learned to depend on God. Nothing that pleases God is accomplished in our own strength. This would be true also for the people that bore Jacob's new name, the Israelites. As a nation, it would be victorious in its own strength, would not be victorious in its own strength, but God would fight for it. And so Old Testament history records that the nation was only blessed as it relied on God's provision. Self-sufficiency and faith are incompatible, and Jacob has learned that. He was brought to the point of having to seek God's blessing. Jacob matched his opponent's strength, but was actually overcome by God. In the same way we overcome by wrestling with God to get his blessing, and we win even when he dominates us. Kind of a paradox there, right? We struggle with God to get his blessing. He dominates us in the struggle, and we win. So it's a win-win situation in a sense. God was testing Jacob to see what he was made of, just as he tested his grandfather Abraham with a knife hanging over Jacob's father Isaac. Trials, ours or Abraham's or Isaac's or Jacob's, are designed by God to bring us to the point where we insist on a blessing from God and give up living in our own strength. Heavenly Father, we thank you for this example from so many hundreds of years ago. Example of a man who attempted for more than 20 years to live in his own strength, by his own scheming, struggling with others and usually winning. Thank you, Heavenly Father, in your sovereignty, you worked in him and used that struggle that he had with human beings and reversed it, bringing it to a struggle with you and showing us that Jacob's real issue was not with other people, but with you yourself. Thank you, Heavenly Father, that you changed this man and showed us how you change sinful human beings still today into people who are more like you and ready for your eternal presence. We thank you for this account in Jesus' name.